All right, it looks like the majority of people are back, so hope everyone had a good break, and the others will join the table, I'm sure, momentarily. Our next discussion is on signing the auditor's report, and this topic relates to another recommendation from the Treasury Advisory Committee. In this case, the Treasury Advisory Committee recommended that the PCAOB should consider mandating the engagement partner sign signatures on the auditor's report. This discussion is not new to the SAG. We brought this discussion to the SAG back in 2005. But we thought it was worthwhile to bring it back, one, because the Treasury did consider this and just finalized this recommendation in their October 6, 2008 report. And also, the European Communion's 8th directive recently went into effect in law that requires the engagement partner's signature on the report. Last time, we did not have panelists, so this time we have brought panelists in to assist the SAG in providing additional input on this topic. So I'd like to introduce them now, and if you could just raise your hand. The first panelist that will be speaking is Janice Hester Amy. Janice is a portfolio manager in the Global Equities Corporate Governance Asset Group at the California State Teachers Retirement System, also known as, or EASER, known as CalSTRS. CalSTRS is a public pension fund that serves the California public school teachers. The fund has over 800,000 members and beneficiaries and $148 billion in assets. The next is Bob Kippers. Bob, can you raise your hand? I'm not sure everyone knows you. Bob, obviously we know Bob. He's a member of the Standing Advisory Group, but Bob also is the Deputy CEO and Vice Chairman of Deloitte. So we've asked him in this case to provide his views as from the auditor's perspective. And then finally, Jean Bedard. Jean, welcome. Jean is a professor of accountancy at Bentley University. So it was Bentley College as of last week, so it's bet correctly on her, on the slides here, Bentley University. She teaches financial reporting and auditing. And her research interests include audit quality, audit firm portfolio, risk management, and corporate governance. So we're very grateful for their participation in this discussion today. I've asked each of them to spend about 5-10 minutes presenting their views on the subject. And then after that, I'd like to open up the discussion to the SAG. And we have two discussion questions that were teed up in the paper. One is the pros and cons of mandating the signature of the engagement partner in the auditor's report, which flows from the recommendation from the Treasury. But the second expands that recommendation a little more broadly, and that is pros and cons on including signatures of other members of the engagement team or of the accounting firm, such as a second or concurring partner review, the quality control partner, the firm CEO, and others that may or may be appropriate. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to our distinguished panelists to present their views. And Janice, you're first. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Janice Hester Amy, and I'm a portfolio manager, as Jennifer said, in the Corporate Governance Unit at the California State Teachers Retirement System. California STRS serves the retirement needs of California's public school educators, K through 12, and community colleges and their families. As of June 30th, 2008, we had 813,000 members and benefit recipients. And actually, when I sent the information to Jennifer, we did have $148 billion, but now we have $130 billion. So,
Are you sure?
Well, you know.
You're doing well.
CalSTRS is the largest teachers' retirement system in the country and the second largest employer-based plan in the U.S. The fund currently has 48% of the portfolio dedicated to equity securities. Domestic equity securities account for about $45 billion, and international public equities account for another $20 billion. CalSTRS, similar to other major institutions, holds equity in thousands of public companies, so we have broad long-term exposure to equity markets across the globe. Thank you for allowing me to be here today to comment on the Department of Treasury Advisory Committee's report on the auditing profession. Although this is a very comprehensive report, and there are many recommendations in it that CalSTRS supports, I'm here to comment on the committee's recommendation, also known as Recommendation 6, that the PCAOB undertake a standard-setting initiative to consider mandating that the engagement partner of the audit firm sign the audit report. As the PCAOB and the Standard Advisory Group are keenly aware, the integrity of financial statements is important to all investors. Institutional investors rely upon the integrity and efficiency of the markets due to the fact that large portions of our portfolio are passively invested. The role of the audit in our capital markets is critical, as it serves as the most significant independent verification of the accuracy of financial statements. We don't have to recite all of the high-profile companies that have failed in recent years and the associated accounting scandals here today. But the resulting losses from these failures and scandals have hit investors hard and have served to undermine confidence in our capital markets. For obvious reasons, many institutions, including CalSTRS, have put resources and effort towards strengthening the role of the auditor, increasing independence, and improving the accountability of the audit function to investors. Broadly speaking, whatever can be done to improve the confidence of investors in these audited financial statements, and by extension the markets, should be done. CalSTRS believes that requiring the engagement partner to sign the audit report is consistent with our overall objective to improve and maintain the quality of audits and increase the accountability of auditors and their work product, the audit to investors. The simple step of requiring the audit partner to sign the audit report will, we believe, increase ownership of the audit by the audit team, a concept that will certainly help investors gain confidence in the quality of audits. We appreciate the fact that the PCAOB and the SAG have had substantive discussions over the past several years regarding the auditor's reporting model, and we understand that many members support a proposal to require the audit partner to sign the audit. We're in good company on this issue. The International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board came to the same conclusion in 2005, stating that audit firms should assign responsibility for each engagement to an engagement partner, and that the engagement partner should take responsibility for the overall quality on each audit engagement to which that partner is assigned. And now our own U.S. Department of the Treasury, the European Union's 8th Directorate, and Arthur Levitt, former SEC Commissioner, all the way back to the 2000 review of the audit profession, recommend the same prescription. The engagement partner should sign the audit report in order to enhance transparency and accountability. The advisory committee's report calls it the audit firm's roles are crucial to the public markets here and around the world. The Treasury Advisory Committee's report calls it noble. We agree with the Treasurer's report that the signature should not impose any greater obligations or liabilities than what already exists for the engagement partner as a member of the audit firm. When the investment staff at CalSTRS prepares materials for our trustees at CalSTRS, our CIO requires that the persons preparing the document sign it, as well as the director of the unit, and finally the CIO signs off on the document. These are all manual signatures, and this step does make each signatory read the document, proof the document, question and verify the document. Certainly, this is a quality control measure, but more importantly, it is an accountability measure, an assurance feature for our trustees designed to give them comfort that they are looking at all of our best efforts to provide them with the information they need to oversee the fund. We think it's simple, elegant, and direct. To close, CalSTRS has long been concerned about the integrity of financial statements and has consistently applied resources to the infrastructure of financial reporting and its effect on markets. We went through an extensive review of our portfolio in order to determine the companies that do not put their audit firm up for ratification by shareholders. And we are now petitioning the SEC and the exchanges to make this a ballot item requirement and a listing standard. We understand that we have a fiduciary duty to monitor the operation of the audit committee and the performance of the auditors, and we want a universal way to achieve that review. We would like the auditor report that is included in the proxy statement to include the engagement partner's signature as well. Shareholders do not have visibility to every audit firm employee that worked on the company's audit, nor should they. It is far more efficient, transparent, and in the interest of accountability to have the engagement partner's signature on the report. We believe that Sarbanes-Oxley contemplated your authority over these standards in the original legislation and that you now have both cause and opportunity to mandate it. It does not appear to us that anyone other than the PCAOB can mandate this standard. Thank you for allowing me to present the views of CalSTRS on this important issue.
Thank you, Janice. Bob Kippers.
Thanks, Jen. Janice, very, very well put, very articulate. And I'm on behalf of the profession, we appreciate, as a profession, the support of many of the investor groups around the importance of the auditing function and the need to strengthen it. I certainly don't disagree with that at all. I just want to make sure that the confidence that you mentioned that's put in the audit process is not misplaced in any way, that it be rooted in reality. And I think for purposes of getting the dialogue, I want to make sure that, you know, we present the other side of the issue from the audit firm perspective, because this is an issue where I don't think it's that difficult to find common ground, but there are some implications that I thought I would review. And on balance, I'm not a proponent of this idea, but I think there's probably ways to achieve the same objectives that you mentioned, Janice. Let's go back just a few years to some of the audits that led to the passage of Sarbanes-Oxley. And at that time, I think the public at large, not only investing public, but the public at large, got a look into auditing in a way that probably had not been the case for many, many years prior to that. And we learned a couple of things. One of the things we learned was that clients, you know, companies, big companies like Enron and the others, should be clients of the firm. They should not be clients of an office. They should not be clients of a person. These big complex clients demand the attention of the entire firm, and if you give too much authority to a level below the firm, I think you can get into some trouble. We also learned that it's dangerous when an office or a partner can effectively override or ignore the firm's position on a technical matter. Firms have since that time, and frankly prior to that as well, worked harder than ever to reaffirm and embed the consultative culture that we encourage all of our partners to participate in. I know in our firm, and I think I speak for others, there is no partner in our firm that has the authority to sign the firm's opinion, whether it's with his name or the firm's name, with accounting in those financial statements that differ from a position the firm has taken through its process. And that would be grounds for removal from the firm if you were to sign an opinion against the conclusion the firm had reached. I also think it's important to keep in mind there is a difference between a person, in other words, a practitioner, and then the firm as a whole. And sometimes I analogize to law firms, because we're all sort of used to working with law firms in some form or fashion. And I choose to pick on David Becker for that. I mean, I could pick up the phone and talk to David about a legal issue and have a nice conversation, and then I'd say, well, David, I know you're on the clock, so I guess I have two choices. You could send me a chatty memo from David Becker with some of your thoughts around this, but you know, this is a really big issue for us, and I really want an opinion of your firm. I want you to go through the whole process to give me Cleary Gottlieb Steen & Hamilton opinion, and I know that what the product that comes out of that process would be very different than just having a conversation with David. We all speak with our clients every day about technical matters, but at the end of the day, sometimes I'll say, well, do you want to know what I think, or do you want the position of our firm? And depending on the issue, we go through our process, our consultation process. At the end of all that, of course, they get the position of the firm. And I don't think we should confuse the authority of a partner versus the weight of the whole firm behind the issue. Accountability is important, and one of the things I would observe is that in so many ways, our partners are absolutely accountable. First, they're accountable to the firm itself, through our own internal inspection process, through our own quality rating system that drives compensation for the audit partners. There's no question that the individuals are accountability to the rest of their partners. The regulators, of course, including the PCAOB, have inspection regimes, they have enforcement programs, and at the end of the day, if someone is investigated, whether or not a case is brought, it could in fact be the end of their career. And of course, on at least a quarterly basis, and maybe twice that much, the intimate relationship that the audit committee has with the actual engagement team and as sort of agents of all the investors, monitoring the quality of the people, the progress of the audit, the resources brought to bear, are firmly creating a situation where the partner who does have that quality responsibility is accountable to its client, the audit committee. I do agree with Larry that the ultimate client are the investors. The question in my mind is always the tension between how much should go directly to investors and how much should be managed through the audit committee process representing the investors, and that's not an easy question. And finally, I think the partners are accountable individually to the private claimants and litigation. It's certainly not difficult for a regulator or in litigation to get the names of the people. That's always at the ready when there are problems after the fact. But my real worry, in part, is that I don't believe this would improve audit quality. I think the other motivators of audit quality, including compensation, including the accountability points I just mentioned, are by far and away the most effective way. To think that because I'm going to sign my name, I'm really going to do a better job when I have my entire career, my net worth, my reputation on the line in any event, I don't think it makes much difference. I think signing your name and signing the firm's name is equivalent. In fact, I think the hand might shake a little more when you're signing your firm's name, because at that point, you're bringing, as I sometimes say, you're bringing in the boat with you, depending on the size of your firm, all of your partners and all their families. And by your authority to commit the firm to the opinion that you're rendering, in many ways, I think that has even more serious tone and tenor to it as you sign, as you sign that report. In my case, as Deloitte & Touche, I will point out that I've got multiple name tags. I have Robert J. Kippers, I have Robert J. Kippers, Deloitte & Touche LLP, and I think there's a third one that just says Deloitte & Touche, but I don't know where that one is. The point is that's a serious matter, and I know that our partners take it very, very seriously. I have some thoughts for the board on how to deal with this. I think that you're not going to hear any new arguments today. I think that when we talked about it in February of 2005, most of those things are the same as now. There have been a few developments. The EU and the Eighth Directive have sort of memorialized what for decades, if not longer, has been the practice in Europe. But the statutory auditor and that custom of having the individual sign is frankly rooted in a long history in many of the countries of providing fiscal or tax advice and having an accountable person. It's a little different than an audit quality measure, but it's been memorialized now for the future for all the 25 or 27 EU states as part of the world going forward. But what I'd say to the board is do some additional research to determine the level of support for this individual partner signing idea. I think that we've had good articulation from academics, investors, and some degree the firms, but I haven't heard a whole lot from the issuer community or the audit committee community yet, so you probably should solicit some ideas from those groups. If you choose to propose a change, I think that's fine, but I predict that the letters will give you the same arguments you're probably going to hear in our dialogue today, and I think if you look at the letters already on file with the Treasury process, you're going to see the same sort of give and take, the same pros and cons. But my real urging is if you ultimately choose to move in this direction and make such a change, I would ask you not to justify it as a substantive change, but an optical one. One that there's pressure to do, that's fine. If that's where the world's going, let's do it. But it should not be framed as something that will be a significant change in audit quality or something that, people will perceive something's different now. And I'm not sure anything will in substance be different. Let me leave my comments right there, and let's hear from Jean, and then we can have our discussion.
Thank you, Bob. Jean, the floor is yours.
All right, thank you. I guess there's a reason I'm sitting in the middle here today between my two colleagues. My remarks are based on two perspectives, and first as the academic on the panel, I see my role as providing a viewpoint to this policy based on research to the extent that research is there. And the second is my views are also informed by my experience as one of the three-member tracking team for the American Accounting Association to the Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession. Okay, so let me start by considering the two purposes of this proposal, and these were implicit in what Janice and Bob said, but I'd like to make them more explicit. They are no doubt related, but useful to consider them separately. First, transparency, of course, implies that an underlying process becomes visible. In this context, of course, we are thinking that knowing the identity of the audit engagement partner could be useful to market participants in assessing relative financial reporting quality, as this would provide some indication on how the audit was conducted. So let's call this the detective effect, all right, that knowing who runs the engagement reveals something about the process. That is useful to investors in making financial decisions. Now, in addition to a detective effect, this policy is also intended to have a preventive effect, publicly identifying the partner in charge of the engagement or multiple people, that's also on the table, is intended to improve financial reporting quality by increasing accountability of the individuals in charge. The intent here is that through time, financial reporting quality will rise as greater accountability changes behavior among any engagement partners who are not now meeting the standards set by the PCAOB and their firms. Okay, now, so is there any direct evidence that engagement partner signature affects financial reporting quality? For instance, you've got countries that have done this and countries that have not. So research could have compared financial reporting quality in similar countries before and after implementing this policy, although I admit it would be tough research to do. However, I was unable to find any reports of such studies. Thus, unless I've missed something, there appears to be no direct evidence on whether financial reporting quality is actually affected by engagement partners' signature or whether investors' perceptions of financial reporting quality are affected, and that's a related but, of course, distinct issue. So there are no reported studies. Well, we're also unable to tell, as kind of sidebar here, because there are no studies, we're also unable to tell whether engagement partner signatures have some of these negative effects that are listed in the briefing paper. For instance, would it mislead investors about responsibility of individual partners versus the firm, kind of relating to Bob's comments here? Would it reduce the number of firms willing to audit risky public companies? Would it reduce the numbers of people willing to enter the profession? We really have no evidence on this. I think I'm starting a research program here to address some of these issues. It looks like this opportunity. But all right, so since there's no direct evidence on financial reporting quality, let's take a step back and consider the theory as to why this policy might achieve its intended effects and consider the research that already is out there in the context of the auditing profession that tests this theory. Okay, so why would accountability change behavior? According to social psychologists, accountability is being answerable to an audience, which implies you're identified to that audience as the producer of a work product. Now, the engagement partner signature proposal just expands the audience. Obviously, the engagement partner is visible to people inside the firm, to the audit committee, to the PCAOB, but this proposal expands the audience to investors in general. So now, when an individual is accountable, there's an increase in self-critical thinking, which is thinking harder about the decisions you must make and possible threats to the quality of your response based on your intended audience. So that's the theory. What evidence is there in the auditing context? There are a couple of studies. Most find that when auditors are accountable, the effort involved in the decision increases, and the quality of the decision outcome increases also. And just a couple of examples here real quick. Auditors under accountability produce more conservative and less variable materiality judgments when accountable, use more qualitative factors in arriving at materiality judgments. Another study on analytical procedures, auditors under accountability plan more audit tests, focus more testing on possible misstatements as opposed to non-error causes, perhaps of fluctuations. And a third study found that the effects of accountability are stronger when audit tests are more complex and when participants are more knowledgeable. And here today, of course, we're talking about a partner in charge in the most complex level, so that means, I guess, that it should apply at that level. Thus, some research shows that accountability works in inducing greater care and better decisions within the context of the firm's chain of command. Now, these results are probably not surprising to any of us, right? Because accountability in terms of identifying the persons who perform the various steps in the audit function, it's long been a part of quality control in audit firms. It's just part of the culture. So we don't have any direct evidence on whether those results, these studies done on associates and seniors, would apply to engagement partners if they were identified to investors. There's no direct evidence on that I know of. All right. So I guess then my next thought was, then why would this not apply in the current context of engagement partner signatures? And I guess I could think of two reasons why it might not work here. And one of them, and this is, I think, basically Bob's point, is that current accountability structures are already sufficient. Current quality control policies in firms that audit public companies, PCOB inspection process, already induce such a high level of quality that there's no incremental effect of the engagement partner signing. PCOB has insider knowledge of this, and they share some and they don't share other things, but the publicly available information to date suggests there's room for improvement, and I'm sure the bar will rise as we go into the future. A second reason that this policy might not work, or accountability might not work in this context, is that public identification of the partner would not have the standard accountability effect, and when in fact it would have the opposite effect. And I think Bob referred to this. It's also in the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales report. Like, the partner would be less willing to consult with others if only the partner, the lead partner, were publicly named. It's a concern, I think, to me at least, and we can discuss, that it seems this effect could be reduced by adding the names of others in the chain of command, which is one of the things we need to talk about today. So it's not this go-it-alone Enron sort of effect, but rather people in the direct line up to the top of the firm participate in the signature. All right, well, to summarize the research here, accountability has been shown to produce more conservative judgments among auditors, more testing. These results are consistent with improving financial reporting quality, but they consider lower-level staff, not partners. The logic is compelling, but the evidence is indirect. So now we can consider these thoughts further. My time is limited, and I've already gone over, so let me come to my second point here, which is relating to my experience on the ACAP of tracking team. In our response to the committee, we recommended that the engagement partner sign the firm's name as well as his or her own. But we also noted later on in our response to the firm structure and finances section of the report that we kind of viewed these recommendations, this family of transparency recommendations, as part of a package that would potentially involve some liability relief and improve the sustainability picture. And of course that didn't happen for a lot of reasons. But it does affect how I feel at least about implementing some of these proposals that otherwise seem valuable. What could be done? Well, the Center for Audit Quality mentioned in their letter to the ACAP that a safe harbor provision might be enacted for partners who sign. If, in fact, the liability isn't changed, then it just seems to me it shouldn't be a big step to explicitly state that. Whether that would protect people or not, I don't know. So that is one possible way of a middle ground here, perhaps, or relieving some of these concern on the part of the firms. So I believe I have gone over time, so I'll end here and look forward to the discussion. Thanks very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Jean.
Thanks.
Jean was just talking about the liabilities issue, and the paper, the SAG briefing paper, did not really touch on that. But just a few observations. I spoke to our general counsel's office for any feedback on they have, and three points. And I don't want the focus of this discussion this morning to really center on that, because that is an issue. But we are looking at the signing of the report. But three observations. One, whether the signing of the report would subject the partner to increased risk of liability is a complex issue, and it will require analysis of federal and state law, including an analysis of a Supreme Court decision earlier this year. Second point is the Treasury Advisory Committee did indicate in its report that the committee notes that the signature requirement should not impose on any signing partner any duties, obligations, or liability that are greater than the duties, obligation, and liability imposed on such person as a member of an auditing firm. The committee noted that this language is similar to safe harbor language the SEC promulgated in its rulemaking pursuant to Sarbanes-Oxley Section 407 for Audit Committee Financial Experts. And then third point here is if the decision is made by the PCAOB to move forward with a proposal in this area, we will certainly need to give further consideration to potential liability issues. And, of course, this is something the board may wish to seek public comment on before adopting any final rules. So for purposes of this discussion, really we're looking at the benefits, looking at the committee's recommendation and which is encouraging us to mandate the signature, recognizing liability is an issue that will require future study by us, and if we were to move forward, we would certainly consider that issue and likely see comment on that point. But otherwise, we'd like to open up the floor as far as the benefits of this proposal as it is. So the first discussion question relates to seeking feedback on pros and cons of including the signature of the engagement partner on the auditor's report. And certainly in your remarks, you may just have comments on that, and you're certainly welcome to ask any follow-up questions from our panelists, Bob, Janice, and Jean. Okay, Bob Kippers, since you're at double duty, we'll give you first chance.
And I have two signs, so I should absolutely be selected first. Thank you. I was just going to pick up on some of Jean's comments. One of the areas I think is actually ripe for some research, because you talked about research that might have been dealt with sort of seniors and assistants, but I don't know if anyone's really taken a look at the partners in the firms, and it could be firms of any size. The changes in sort of the levers or the motivators of quality have really changed, massively over the last years. And I mean, it used to be the threat of civil litigation, which might be way down the road, would be one of those things that would keep you focused on quality. But now it's so much more immediate with PCAOB inspection, with quality ratings that impact this year's compensation or next year's compensation, or the fact if you had a bad PCAOB review, that's not a career enhancing move. And so why not research with the actual partners some of the hierarchy of things that cause them to stay focused on the business at hand and doing a good job? Because I think that whatever snapshot you would have taken 10 years ago would look very different today. And usually it's left to people like me at meetings like this to explain what I see and what I hear. But I think some research directly with the partners would be very beneficial.
Thank you. Ernie Ball.
Could I respond just a second? Yeah. I stand ready to do that research. It's very difficult to get partners. They're busy.
I'll give you 1,000 partners. Don't worry.
This is on record, and it's webcast. Thanks, Bob. Call you in the morning.
Ernie?
Well, we can start your research right now. I'm sure that a lot of people have put a lot of effort into this project. However, as was intimated by Bob, I think that effort is very akin to rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. I do not think that whether or not you have a partner sign the audit report along with the name of the firm is going to make one bit of difference. If it does, he shouldn't have been a partner to begin with. You know, we take that signature, that firm signature, extremely serious. If my name was on it as well, I wouldn't take it any more serious. I echo Bob's comment that if we do something along this nature, it should not be couched in as a means to improve audit quality. I do not think that will happen.
Thank you. Gene, did you want to respond? Or?
No, I wanted to ask Ernest, how would you couch it? If not as an audit quality move, what Bob said, optical, I think was the word you used. How would you?
If it will improve investors' faith, perception of the reliability of financial statements, I think that may be beneficial. But you just have to realize that it's not going to be a real improvement to audit quality.
I actually don't think the recommendation suggests that it will improve audit quality. I think it focuses on transparency and accountability and the perceived value of the report to the market participants as a whole. And that's what we are concerned about. We're also concerned that in Sarbanes-Oxley there is a suggestion or a recommendation that you rotate the partners on audit firms or on audits, I think every 5 or 7 years. And since this isn't visible to us as shareholders, we've adopted the much more what we think is disruptive guideline of rotating the whole firm. And I think if we had the visibility of the partner's signature, it would be a lot easier to carry out that suggestion.
Okay, Harold, did you have your sign up? That name 10 is blocked by a water pitcher. Cindy Richson, then. Sorry.
Thank you. First, I'd like to thank the panel. I thought the comments were excellent, and in particular, I think Janice, I wholeheartedly agree with your position on encouraging the PCAOB to undertake standard setting in this area. I'd just like to make a couple of comments. First of all, I thought it was interesting, Bob, and not to pick on you, but that having the audit or the engagement partner signature versus the firm signature is the equivalent. And the analogy you made to law firms, whether you're the firm name or the partner, and having been both an attorney in private practice and in-house hiring outside counsel to represent the company's interests, you actually do both. You hire the firm for their reputation, their brand, just like you would hire the audit firm, but you also hire the individual partner or associate or whoever you're working with because of their expertise, the value that they bring to the engagement. So I don't necessarily agree that it's equivalent. And the thing that I find really interesting, because the audit firms are required in the UK to file these annual reports, not to pick on a firm, but I happen to have the KPMG UK annual report from 2007, and there are disclosures on the legal structure. And so when you say the firm, I'm not quite sure exactly what you're referring to, because in this report, the KPMG report, it states that KPMG LLP is the UK member firm of KPMG International, a Swiss cooperative that serves as a coordinating entity for a network of independent member firms that provide audit, tax, and advisory services to a wide variety of public and private sector organizations. Each member firm is a separate and independent legal entity and describes itself as such. So I think, if for nothing else, it would add clarity, especially as I hear that more audit work is being outsourced to offshore locations such as India, et cetera. If for no other reason, having the engagement partner sign the auditor's report is informational at a minimum. And I do think while it may not have, there may be no direct evidence, and I encourage, I don't know that further study and research is warranted on this issue. It's rather straightforward. It's about enhancing transparency. And in terms, I think, Bob, you mentioned that you're not sure what the level of support is, but I understand, and Damon, correct me if I'm wrong, I think all the investor comment letters to the Treasury recommendation were unanimously supportive of this particular recommendation. So I think clearly it has significant institutional investor support. And if for no other reason, if the EU, in its wisdom, has passed the 8th directive making this a requirement, we've heard about international convergence for the 5 years I've been on the SAG, and it would harmonize U.S. standards with European standards, and I think that also would be very beneficial. So greater transparency, it would incent greater accountability, it would be informative, it would help clarify which part of the firm was involved in the engagement, in charge of it, and there's the report in 2005 from the Institute of Chartered Accountants of England and Wales looking at this and talked about the benefits. So the rotation issue that Janice mentioned, this is something we haven't talked about yet, would highlight the specific responsibilities that the audit engagement partner has for the quality of the audit. Again, informational. So I thank the panel. I think this is an important issue, and I hope PCAOB moves forward on it.
Thank you, Cindy. Gary Kaburek.
Thank you. Let me like to give a view of financial statement issuers on this subject. And jumping to the end, I actually don't support individual partners' names going in the document, either as a signature or as a byline in a 10-K or whatever. As a signing officer, I have to admit I don't feel extremely strongly about that because I see my name in all these documents. And they say, well, if my name's in it, well, why not the partners? But so it's not one I would lay in the track some, but I actually don't support it. And I'll tell you why. You know, it is, first of all, I think, is putting the individual person's name, and I think someone makes audit partner in a firm, whether a small firm, medium-sized firm, or large firms, I think we're detracting from their professionalism, meaning that I don't know that they need to see their name in lights to do a good job, to make their best professional judgments, to engage experts in the firm, or however else they choose to do the audit. I think we're taken away from the skills and the competencies that got them to the position that they're in their firms today. So I think there's plenty of reasons, both inside the firm for its own management processes, that I think, to some extent, they've already earned the right, you know, to get where they are. And does this? I'm not sure this enhances it a whole lot. But I, as a preparer, I'm worried about a number of unintended consequences that I think will happen out of this. And I'm talking as a preparer, as an issuer. First of all, I think if this is going to result in extra costs, well, there's a lot of accounting and auditing changes that are out there that are increased in costs. But if imagine yourself as an audit partner going to an audit committee or to the chairman of your company and saying, I need to increase my audit fee because I'm signing this thing. And so the glass is half full argument is that there's more accountability and greater focus and stuff. And the glass is half empty argument is they want to do more work because they're afraid not to do more work. And I just think that would be a dull conversation if you're trying to pass along extra work in the form of fees. However, you know, be that as it may, like I said, there's lots of reasons why audit fees go up or they go down. However, let's talk through a couple of things that could happen over time that issuers would be asked to answer questions on. So if we, what would happen if the audit partner left the account early, they got promoted, or they decided early to retire? Or what if they left the account because of a client service issue or an internal discipline issue unrelated to the client? I think the financial statement issuer has got to be prepared to respond to a question from someone. Why did this person leave your account before the five-year window? And it's one thing to say, well, the person got promoted. It's another thing to say he was disciplined on something unrelated to us and every reason in between. I don't think issuers should be put into that spot of possibly having to give that answer. You know, And it also might be dull to say, well, you should ask the firm why the person left early. I think you have to have an answer. And sometimes the answers you won't mind giving, sometimes you will mind giving. And then another unintended consequence could be if your partner says something controversial either in a speech or at a SAG meeting or they send a letter to another standard setter and there's an issue or you might be prepared, is that how that partner's approaching your account or your audit or those the judgments he's making on yours? And again, I think you have to have an answer for that other than no comment or it's we can't answer that or we don't know. Those answers don't really work. So again, I think the unintended consequences is you have to have an answer for it. And again, sometimes you might want to give the answer, but again, you're commenting on activities and actions of people that don't work for you, and that's just not a good spot to be in all that often. So I think, again, I wouldn't lay in the traps on this one to keep their name out of it, but I think that's a view from a financial statement issuer point of view. We absolutely view that we hire the firm and all the firm's resources is, I think, you know, certainly I think all large companies would probably feel that way. They don't want to talk for small companies. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Janice, I noticed your card up. I didn't know if you wanted to respond to that.
Well, not necessarily to him. I wanted to follow on what Cynthia was saying. Is that okay? Okay. Cynthia and I share something in common. We both read a lot of proxy statements and annual reports. And I brought part of the proxy statement from a company called MGP Ingredients. I'm not going to read the whole thing to you, so don't worry. But on this section, independent public accountants, it starts out by saying, BKD LLP was previously the principal accountant for the company. On September 17th, 2008, the audit review committee of the company approved the dismissal of BKD LLP and the engagement of KPMG LLP as the company's independent registered public accounting firm. KPMG has informed the company that it completed its respective client evaluation process on September 18th. And then it goes on to give a long description of all the arguments that it had with BKD. As an investor, I would, when I see BKD as an auditor, I don't, as an audit reporting firm on a company that I own, I would be interested in knowing whether I should be happy at whoever was the engagement partner, or if I should be apprehensive whenever I see BKD as the firm auditing a company that I own. And so I think a lot of the issues that the last speaker brought up, I think they can be dealt with asterisks and safe harbor protections. But I think it's still the perception of value that's created for the investor and the perception that someone is taking responsibility for the audit and the ability to identify the engagement partner still outweighs the other concerns. And I don't think we're suggesting that the audit engagement partner will do a better job for having his name in lights or her name in lights. It's I think the intent here is more for the investor than it is for the audit firm.
Thank you, Janice. Janice, you were pointing out proxy disclosures, and just want to point out that proxy disclosures or rules regarding that do not follow the purview of the PCAOB. That's the SEC, and certainly there was a related recommendation related to proxy disclosures. But we don't control that. You know, our focus this morning is on the audit report and whether or not the same.
Right, but we'd like to have that in the proxy.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, Ted White.
Thank you. First, I mean, I think investors recognize that this is not a silver bullet. But in listening to the conversations here, I thought the panel discussion was good, and Janice articulated the points very well. But we're making this a much more complicated issue than it needs to be. I do believe this is about audit quality. This has, I think, every opportunity to just raise the level of ownership. I do not see that there is any significant downsides. I have to respectfully disagree with Ernest and Bob in while individually that may have very little impact on how their perception of their responsibilities may be, and that just attests to their level of professionalism. From an investor's perspective, across the universe of auditors, this has the potential to add some benefit. And I just do not think that the potential that it would maybe bring some hard questions to issuers or to audit firms is necessarily a negative thing. I mean, we spent yesterday afternoon, this morning, talking about trying to identify audit quality measures and how we'd bring transparency to them. Some of the questions that are going to come through this are directly related to audit quality issues. And a little bit of transparency in this issue, I think, is a good thing. So I would just strongly support it. I think you're going to find fairly unanimous position from investors. But this just appears to be a good thing. Again, not a silver bullet. We understand that. But very little downside.
Thank you. Damon Silvers.